Devices Radio Network.
Blood, Sweat, and Gear is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Kids, do not try this at home.
Oh, I'm back! The fog is lifted, the earth is shifted, it raised the gifted. You knew I'd be back, so pack your bone and hit the road, Jack! Cause daddy's home with the funky hot grits, thick like Al Roker, pumping out hits, getting chips like Oprah. Bitch, I told ya, do not hate or question the music I make. I make hard rock, and I mix it with the hip hop, and get you higher than a tree top. You wanna roll with the kid rock? I make southern rock, and I mix it with the hip hop. Got money like four knocks. I'll forever be the kid rock. Forever, the junkies are still seeing.
Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Gear. I'm your host, Scott, and with me is S2H and Skip Hill. Guys, how are you doing? Skip, I want to let everybody know, first of all, before I introduce Skip, that we are in three different time zones here. So it's like later morning for me, a little bit earlier morning for S2H, and unfortunately for Skip, it's the earliest for him. So, Skip, we had to wake you up this morning to get you on the show. How you doing, man? Oh, shit, fell back asleep.
Oh, shit, yeah. No, yeah, it's so early here. It's early for me. You know, it's what, 11? It's 11:30 here, 1:30 for Scott, 12:30 for, or 2:30 for you, right? No, I'm not even close. 11:30, 12:30, and 1:30.
Yes, sir.
No, it's not terribly early, but I'm late. I'm up super late. So this is like 6 a.m. for me.
I was trying to give you, like, nobody knew that. That was the magic for radio until you gave it
away. I know. I'm not very good. I'm going to totally just blow. I'm like, I got my sexy radio voice on because I just got up. I'm a little nasally this morning, but God damn, am I sexy.
Listen, I wanted to tell you something, man. So, you know, I've been trying to, you know, like you or Scott Stevenson will post something cool on Facebook. Like, you posted this video the other day. It was like a finishing exercise for back. I went to share it on the Advices Radio Facebook page, and it said something like, due to the privacy of this video, you cannot share this on your page. So I just want to let you know, yeah, heads up, man. You.
What do I do with that?
I'm not sure. I think
what am I not doing?
You got me only. You got me only settings.
I think it's in the settings somewhere.
Yeah, well, I definitely need to change that then, but I didn't know that I had it closed. I mean, it's not a private account, but I guess maybe that doesn't have. I'll have to check on that.
It might have been
I'll have to ask my 12-year-old daughter
right?
for the setting issues on Instagram.
I bet you have it set for like friends only, so that when I went to share it on the Advices page, that's like, you know, public for anyone to see that goes to that page. I bet you that's it.
Yeah, but I'll definitely check on that then.
We can scratch our heads on this one for a while. Like you said, though, just get your 12-year-old and she will probably get it situated. So, but how you doing, man? What's going on?
It's good. I had a nice weekend. I had a client in town. One of those cool clients. He's not on social media. Well, I mean, most of my clients are cool, but like a non-competitor, not an older guy like me, but, you know, middle-aged, set, has a career, has he's making a lot of money, shit like that. So we went and grabbed sushi. They have a place up here in Breck. Hmm. We were going to meet last year, but it was only like a week after we had just moved in because they come about the same time every year in March. And we had a blizzard, and I had just moved in, so couldn't do it. So we were able to make it work this time, and it was a pretty good conversation. And just to kind of, you know, it's kind of the cool part about, you know, I don't see a lot of these people that I work with. I never,
yeah.
I don't want to say I never, but I rarely meet them face-to-face unless they are a competitor and I travel to a show, or I might do some training, but still, it's not, and it's nowhere near as common as it used to be. I used to travel a lot more than I do now. So when I get that chance, it is kind of cool. And he was a pretty, I'll tell you what it is. It's when someone has, when they're well-educated, I mean, we're talking, he's got a law degree from Harvard. He went to school, he went to Georgetown at 16 to get his undergrad and had it by the time he was 18.
Wow.
So this guy does a lot of shit. He makes a lot of money. And the coolest, my wife even commented, my wife is just the worst critic of of, you know, people in the industry and excuse me, things like that. And she said, she goes, my God, this guy is just so down to earth. He's so funny. He's so cool. You'd never know that you were stupid, and he's so well educated, and that he makes, you know, so much money. So it was kind of cool, you know, to hang out with him and kind of catch up. It was only for a few hours, but he came by the house and we ran down to Golden and took him to our favorite sushi spot, and nice. He got back up to Breck with his family. Probably was a little bit of a nice break from his in-laws too. I mean, let's be fair. But it was nice. It was a good weekend.
It's interesting because I what I've noticed in diet coaching, especially, you know, with online stuff, is that you're communicating with a lot of people all day long, but actually seeing people in person and in like seeing them face to face, it's a whole other thing, man. You're like, I could go a full day without like actually talking to somebody in person.
Sure. Yeah, and it's part of the reason that I talk so much. My wife won't go anywhere with me. I go to the post office and I will talk to the lady, talk her ear off. My wife's just over there eye rolling me the whole time. So no, definitely. Absolutely.
I want to ask you about your diet in a minute, but let's bring Texas Scott in because he's waiting so patiently on the line.
Scott. Oh, I was in a coma. Hold on. Let me wake up.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good. I stayed up till 4 a.m. and got up at 7.
Whew. Well, you're the youngster out of us. You can do that.
I'm the oldest one. but I did. That was not good. I'm trying to get away from that.
I'd be wrecked for a week.
What are you up so late for?
I actually have a very unique client. That's out of the realm of normal coaching.
Dracula?
Really?
No, it's a young man that's going to be going to one of the military service academies this summer. And so there was a lot to the plan, more than just diet and, you know, training. So, yes, no ROTC or any kind of military experience. So,
you know, this you is the guy.
He's unprepared.
This is the guy you were telling me about, right? So you're not only, this isn't just like coaching. You're talking about like how to properly shine your shoes and stuff, right? For a military.
Yeah, I mean, basic drill. You know, dress, uniform, rank, you know, the basics. You have to take it baby steps. You can't just, you know, we're not going to go do limited penetration CQB or something. I mean, it's just basic stuff that someone would learn basic training, because when you get thrown into that environment, they do PT twice a day and all this drill and all this stuff. And if just everything's foreign to you, that's more you have to try to intake, and the harder it is. So to be prepared with other facets of it, or at least have an understanding and a working knowledge of it, makes them more prepared than just walking in cold off the street. So yeah, it's just not a normal. I've worked with one young man that went to West Point before, but he had been in ROTC, so he was a little more prepared drill-wise and stuff. I'm pretty excited about it.
That's cool. It's kind of a unique position, too. I mean, he can't, you know, you're kind of a unique person to do this. You're not going to find any, like, Skip's not, like, teaching people this stuff. I'm not teaching people, you know, this level of stuff. So that's cool, man. You got, like, a cool niche there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to like bust out the FN SCAR, you know, the second week or anything. So it's nothing high speed, just regular basics, you know, the fundamentals. That's the best way to put it. It's overwhelming.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. I mean, it is. It's some of the military service academies are very demanding. I mean, much more demanding than even basic training or OCS would be. Because you're getting judged, you're being led and being critiqued by a cadet, basically. So, you know, you want to blend in. You just don't want to stick out. You want to be low-hanging fruit. You don't want to be the highest-hanging fruit. You want to be kind of just in there doing what you need to.
What was it you were telling me? We were talking a little bit about Project AD the other day. You are now working with them, huh?
I am. I'm like a helper.
Okay. A spokesmodel?
Well, I'm a model. I sampled some of their products. I liked them. I got to know the owner. And I like his business model is the correct kind of model. It's not a get-rich-quick scheme. It's a building a brand. He's open to changing things. And this is all OTC products, but they got the best GDA I've ever used.
That's what you're
saying. And that's really what kind of... And I used it without... on my own, and then that, you know, kind of made me start looking at more of stuff, and we had communication and stuff, and they're doing it the right way, which is rare or less than normal these days. And it's a pretty good pretty well run company. I mean, it really is.
Right on. Well, I'm looking forward to see, you know, where you go with this and where they go too. We, you know, we mentioned them a few weeks back, and everybody that I know that's used their stuff and some of my clients that have, they've all been happy. So I feel like you're hooked up with the right people over there.
Yeah, it's been a good relationship. And I mean, I haven't used all of the products they have. They have a pretty vast, or I have a health and wellness side, and they have a more of a, you know, OTC side based towards, you know, branching amino acids, essentials, GDAs, stuff like that, NO products and what have you.
Yeah.
And I can only say what I've used and how it's worked. I'm not going to say something they have is great that I haven't used yet because I haven't used it. Yeah. There's a few things I would like NO products, and I just don't really agree. I'm going to use it because I want to try it, but we tend not to do well together.
Well, before we get into our topic, I wanted to ask Skip one more thing, and that's about your diet. I mean, you looked lean to me in that back video I saw. You look like things are. You look like you're leaner than you give yourself credit for, and. But you had mentioned, though, you feel like you're holding water right now. What's going on with that?
Oh, God. Here's the head game. I mean, everybody knows the head game, but I don't usually deal with it. Problem is, I haven't prepped in 5 fucking years. So, you know, I'm roughly 11, 13, and 15 weeks out. Depends on what I do, what I decide to do. But, you know, I've kind of got the shows narrowed down so that they're not big shows. You know, I don't... You know, I'm obviously not what I was, and I am pretty happy with how things are going, don't get me wrong, but I mean, it's still quite a ways out, so I anticipate that things should be going well. I kind of know what the fuck I'm doing. I've done this a couple times.
Yeah.
So things are just starting to change a little bit in the sense that I've been in just a little bit of a, not necessarily, I don't even know if it's really a plateau, but... You know, the weight just isn't falling like it was before. And I don't know where I'm going to end up. So there's a lot of unknown. So what I'm trying to do is I'm just trying to stay ahead. Have that pace going that, you know, as things slow down and I don't have the options that I've had in the past,
yeah,
that I don't run into a time issue. Because, I mean, I think I'm probably more anxious this time that, like, what if I'm wrong? Like, what if I can't get into good enough condition? You know, I'm going to look like a, you know, I mean, think about it. It's not going to be very good. So that would kind of suck. I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen. I anticipate I'll be in good condition. I just don't know how much size I'm going to be holding, that sort of thing. So, you know, on most days I'm like, okay, you know, I'm in pretty good condition. Things are going well. But then just sometimes I'll hold water out of the blue. And, you know, it kind of messes with your head a little bit and that sort of thing. I'm oddly full, which is just kind of a weird thing. And when I start to hold water, I'm fuller, but yet, you know, I have a little bit of minor edema and things like that. So it's kind of a catch-22. It's like, oh, yeah, great. You know, I'm fuller, but I want to see how, you know, lean I am. I want a clear indication. So it's odd for me to hold water later in the week. And that's what I have done. I'll tell you what it is. Part of it is I started the fat burner again this last week, and it's not going, and I don't want to get into it. I don't want to make it, you know, an hour discussion or anything like that. Or, you know, I'm still learning because I don't have a lot of experience with it.
Yeah.
But this time is just, I'll just say, has been completely different than it was a month ago.
Interesting.
So, yeah, and it's still early. I mean, I still have, you know, we'll see how it goes. But I'm doing some different things that part of the reason I don't want to get into it now is because I'm starting to really get into some, doing some different things. And there's no sense me speculating on what's going to happen. And that's when I can just wait until it's done and then give a more of a clear, you know, picture on, oh, okay, I did this time. What is, like, the best way to explain it is this. If I do it exactly as I did it last time, it will work very well because it worked very well last time.
Yeah.
The thing is it's been nagging at me the last week and a half before I started it up again that I don't want to do the same, because if I do the same thing and it works, oh, yeah, I learned nothing. That's really how I feel about it. I'm like, well, I want to change some shit. Maybe it won't work. Maybe it won't work as well. But then again, maybe it will. So, or maybe it'll even work better. So I have all these questions, and this is where, you know, in this is how I've always been. The curiosity ends up that it becomes so overwhelming that I want to see, even if I'm wrong and it doesn't win, I'm like, oh shit, that 2 week run really wasn't that, it wasn't as great. Then I know next time, okay, you tried these, you know, couple things, leave them alone. Don't change it up. Run it like you did before.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, I'm certainly, you know, that's playing a little bit of a part. And the other thing, too, is, and I don't want to sound like a dick when I say this, but I've been getting a lot of questions about, you know, what shows I'm doing. It doesn't matter what shows I'm doing. No one needs to be fearful of me showing up and kicking anybody's ass. And part of the reason I'm not being open about it is because I would rather slide into a lesser known show and just be a nobody than to have people put me under the microscope and then potentially go, oh, well, gosh, he's a fraction of what he used to be. Mm-hmm. I just don't want to deal with that. It's not to impress anybody. It's to prove, I'm doing this to prove to myself that I could pull it off and still get into great. It's almost like, what kind of condition can I be in? So there's the chance that it's not going to be, you know, like maybe some people just aren't going to be fucking impressed with it. So I don't want any more of an audience than I really, you know, than I need. I don't want everybody waiting for me to show up, which I guess, you know, probably sounds, you know, might sound a little arrogant. I certainly don't mean it that way. I'm not so fucking popular when it comes to, you know, competing or anything else that people go, oh my God, I just got to see Skip. Skip is here. Holy shit. I don't mean it that way.
We want to know when to book our airline tickets and stuff. That's,
I know,
why,
right?
We're asking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just, you know, and other people I think who are doing some of the shows that are, excuse me, kind of in line with that time frame, they're like, oh, well. And you know, one guy told me, he goes, well, it'd be cool to compete with you. I'm like, you know what? That's cool. I'm flattered by that. But that's not the majority of people who want to know because, like, I'm going to be there and, like, well, I don't know. I'm a competing. I wonder what Skip looks like. I wonder if he's look, I'm not going to be kicking anybody's. I might even just do the masters divisions, to be honest with you. I might not even do the.
I don't know if I like the sounds of this, Skip.
Well, I say might because, I mean, I still would like to do. You know, there's a big part of me that would still like to do the open and go, you know what? Even if I can just go, you know, top five or something on TRT at 47, that would be, you know, that would be at least saying, you know what, you're on TRT, you can still hang, you're not destroying anybody, but you can still hang. But I just don't know yet where I'm going to end up. I mean, like I say, everything has gone very, very good to this point, but is it going to continue to do that when the calories get really low and I'm just, you know, it's kicking my ass? Is the TRT going to be, you know, am I going to, quite frankly, am I going to make any decisions where I go, you know what, I'm going to throw this in because I'm not showing up not looking, you know, not looking good. I got to look good. So we shall see. I don't know. But I appreciate you. You know, I've had a couple people say, well, you know, you're in pretty good condition. I'm in pretty good condition, but I have this, you know, film that, you know, my skin is still thicker than I want it to be at this point.
You got a lot of time.
So, and the water does not help.
Yeah.
So
you got a lot of time, man.
But there's time.
You know,
there's a lot of time.
You care about what you're doing. You're passionate about it. And whether you're on TRT or not, it's super important to you. And I get it that you just want to be your best. And I feel like that you are your own worst critic right now. And honestly, I feel like when I've done that in my life, that kind of drives me to push to be better. You know what I mean? It's like that uncertainty, that little bit of insecurity almost makes me be like, well, I really need to make this come together to be my best, you know, because I don't want to look dumb or something. You know what I mean?
Sure. Well, it's definitely an unknown. So yeah, I'm only TRT, but I want to show up in, you know, the best condition I absolutely can. I mean, ideally, I'm not going to lie. I want people to go, holy shit, yeah, he's not as big as he was, but TRT, he can still get into that kind of condition. That is ideally what I'm looking for. I still want people to be impressed. I could say, oh, it's for me and everything. But I mean, yeah. I'm doing it from a business end and doing it to try to show other people. That's the whole point of the TRT bodybuilding and DVD and everything else, just to show people, you know, if you've been around for a while and you've put on muscle, not only can you hold a lot of that muscle on TRT, but maybe you can still compete and get into really good condition. So, yeah, I certainly want to, you know, it's still that competitive. Yes, yeah. I want to be the best I can. But then you try to temper it with the reality of, okay, I do have to remind myself that I am TRT. I'm not going to be as big as I was. Yes, I'm running into problems. I don't feel like things are going as quickly and as easily as they were to begin with, but I still got plenty of time. I mean, 11, 13, 15, that's quite a bit of time.
Hell yeah.
So we'll see.
We've got a topic here today. This is something that, that kind of relates to, you know, what you're talking about kind of, you've drawn a line, and, that's what I'm curious about today is, you know, where our lines are. And the reason that this idea came up was, I saw a friend of mine who's also a diet coach, and he had posted information about using nicotine gum as part of your diet prep, you know, and we had talked about nicotine on the show here before. You know, it helps with a little bit of, you know, hunger, helps with satiation, helps with even helps with a little bit of fat loss too. Now my angle, my thought on it is that, you know, having been addicted to nicotine for years, it was a struggle to quit, and I would never want to put myself back in that position again. I've been around the block though, and I know that that's a problem for me. I know that I don't want to cross that line. For other people, maybe some younger guys that are, you know, looking up to, you know, the diet coaches that are posting stuff out there, they might think, oh, this is a viable option for me. And you know what? They may use it and not have a problem, or they could. But we're talking about an addictive substance here. So my thought is that, you know, if this is okay for one coach, you know, where is the line? You know, I mean, because I feel like the same guy wouldn't be saying like, okay, you can use a little bit of meth in your diet. Because I mean, generally, I would imagine that meth would help you to get leaner. It would help to suppress appetite. You'd probably get your cardio in a lot better. So I wanted to ask you guys today, you know, where is that line and how do you determine it? You know, this is bodybuilding, and it's been said, you know, there were people in that thread, even on Facebook, that said, hey, you know, it's bodybuilding. There is no line. But I would like to think in my own life there is. And I imagine, you know, we all have one. So, Scott, I figure I'd turn to you first. We all kind of talked about this through the week just a little bit. And I kind of had a feeling of where both of you are coming from. But let's hear it. Where are you at, Scott?
I'm right here.
Fair enough.
Oh, on the topic?
True, true. Yeah, he right here. Yes, sir. Yeah, topic. So what do you think, man? I mean, I know that for you, nicotine gum is probably, you know, in a different world than meth. But where is the line at?
Well, now that I'm on, like, fourth pouch of chew since the show started, obviously you can only go so far, but... I don't, first of all, certain
drugs, whatever you want to call it, recreational drugs.
Yeah.
Like that one is completely detrimental to prepping because it essentially just eats away at your essential minerals.
Specifically, what are you talking? Are you talking about nicotine?
No, methamphetamine.
Okay, well, that's what I was saying. I was kind of confused. If you said meth, I apologize because
I didn't say that. I meant the one he was saying. But yeah, I mean, I don't see how that. I mean, how many fat meth heads do you know? Mm. Not many,
right? But you get ripped on that stuff, man. I'm telling you, no.
The damage it does to your body outside of the addictive part is totally counterproductive to cutting.
I'm pretty sure he meant figuratively, though. I don't necessarily. Yeah. I don't think he was like, you know, implying that. You were just making the point, like, I mean, it could be coke.
What about
coke? Coke might even be a better one because at least it doesn't it doesn't destroy, other than your septum over the years. You could probably get by with doing coke through a prep and not come out looking like a fucking crack whore at the end.
But you come out addicted too.
Well, yeah, but I think that's the whole, I think, point of the topic. And that's why I say it's a good question because, you know, it's just like you were saying with the line, like, or bodybuilders saying that there is no line. Oh, God, I cringe at that statement, much like I would cringe at, say, a leg press video that has gone viral in the last week.
Uh-oh.
There are just things that you just hear that you go, oh, I'm so disappointed that you have no limits. And people, it's funny because there's two types of people that make a statement like that. One who lies and just wants to sound hardcore because I'm willing to do anything. And then there's legit people who they're fucking willing to do anything. And to each their own, that's great. That's my libertarian side. You know what? You're not impacting, at least directly, anybody else with your decisions of having no limits. So you have every right to destroy yourself in the process of chasing a trophy or a title. And it's a funny thing, and I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but I do want to make this point. It's not usually the really, really good bodybuilders who have that mentality. It's the shitty ones. And so then it almost becomes like, are you just desperate? Are you that, I'll go on record as saying, pathetic? Are you that pathetic that you don't have anything else? That you're willing to put every single thing of your being, anything that matters to you, on the line because, you know, this is what I have to do. This is what I do. This is what I was made to do. Things like that make me kind of shrug my shoulders. I appreciate people who are driven. I appreciate people who are passionate. I appreciate people who, you know, bodybuilding or something else, doesn't even have to be bodybuilding, is, you know, very, very important to them. But in my opinion, I think that it's a huge glaring weakness and character flaw in anything in life when you say I have no limits. To me, that is not something that I look upon and go, oh, that's awesome. Good for you. I think there needs to be a line. That's just me.
Well, I mean, put that.
I would have to say that I know more people that have competed or bodybuilders or whatever in that industry that are using benzodiazepines, opioids, or whatever, than are not. I think it's more prevalent. Adderall is massively prevalent in certain divisions that don't have penises. And it's more prevalent than it's not prevalent. Now, I'm not justifying that that's okay. But there's some drugs, like you're talking about methamphetamine. I mean, it's so counterproductive to prep that it's not even, I mean, it's so addictive and counterproductive that to me is to go over the line because it's not doing you any good in the long run or even the short run.
Okay, but do you think that just based on the, because I do, I'll be honest, I'm just throw it out there right away. My question probably makes my position obvious, but I think that the industry itself is so extreme. When you get into the mentality behind competing. And obviously, I don't, you know, the statements that I make, I understand, probably come across as blanket statements. Not everybody, you know, fits the mold, and not everybody fits the stereotype. I get that. But by and large, it's an extreme sport when you get into the competition end of things. So I'm not terribly surprised that people are willing to do the things. I think that the people who are willing, I think a lot of people who compete and really want to be the best they can, I think that they tend to not have the limits, not just in bodybuilding, but just in general. Like it's almost like they have riskier behavior and live with more risk. And I don't mean in, you know, business decisions or things like that. I mean in actual, like, you know, ride your fucking motorcycle at 180 miles an hour. Just sometimes do stupid shit. I think there's a lot of that, unfortunately, and I call it a sport. I don't like calling bodybuilding or competing a sport, but just so that I can, I guess, provide a label that everybody can understand. I'll refer to it as the industry then. But I think there's a lot of risky behavior in the industry. And I think that there's a lot of people who use training and use competing. And this could rub some people the wrong way, but I guess I don't really give a shit because I believe this and have believed this for years, that it gives a lot of people an escape from reality.
Yeah.
I think that when you don't necessarily have a career or a good job, or you don't make a lot of money, or you have a lot of dysfunction in your life, it's easy to go into the gym and say, you know, things like, oh yeah, when I go in there, I just, you know, I forget the rest of the world. Hell yeah, you do, because the rest of your fucking world sucks. I don't forget the rest of my world because my family and my kids and everything else is cool as fuck. So I might answer my phone if my kid is hitting me or texting me because he might actually fucking need something that's important, while you sit over there and go, oh, you know, you're not hardcore enough, you're on your phone. Nigga, I'm fucking trying to talk to my kid because my kid is doing something fucked up. And that would take priority over just, you know, I don't know, the next set of back. But anyway, I think that sometimes there's a lot of dysfunction, most times maybe, in the sport when it comes to competing. I think more people, we can call it therapy. I know training to me is therapy, and I've said that, you know, a million times over. But I've been in this long enough. I've had my dysfunction. I mean, I can't deny it. I have had things not in perspective and hidden from, you know, the reality of the world in the gym and in competing. And, you know, it's easy to do because it's so involved. It's so, what's the word? It's all consuming. So it's easy to do. My wife admitted that in 08, it was easy for her to compete in and get ready for her first two shows ever because we were having a lot of problems with our older daughter who was running away at that time. So she didn't really know it at the time, but was able to put that together afterwards, saying, yeah, it helped me to focus on other things that were, you know, my meals and my job and training and cardio twice a day, instead of thinking about how mad I was at my oldest daughter for, you know, running away and not going to school and things like that.
You know what? If I could just jump in for a second, I just was going to say that resonates with me because I feel like it's something I've experienced in my own life where, and it is harder. I feel like as I've gotten older, I've matured, and maybe it's not as much an escape for me now, which also makes it, I think, harder to compete and to prep, because I'm still trying to keep like all those other aspects of my life in focus without, you know, running from things. And I don't want to run from things, you know. It almost, I feel like it, you can almost be a better competitor when you are in that dysfunctional place.
Man, that's a good topic and a good discussion, because I can see it both ways. I can see where when you put all your eggs into one basket, you can say, well, I don't have all these other distractions. But yet at the same time, I've seen a lot of people who get better as their life becomes more balanced.
Okay.
And the other thing is, too, and this is important because I've also seen this equally as many times, and it's incredibly unfortunate, when your life there's nothing worse than seeing someone who has potential in bodybuilding who doesn't have their life in a very good spot. They don't have the money financially, like their job or their financial situation is unstable. Their relationship is unstable. We've all seen, you know, where you have relationship issues that completely sidetrack someone. Every now and then it'll be like, oh yeah, I slept on my friend's couch and I was able to pull off the show. And I mean, were you at 100%? I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You probably weren't. So then it becomes, was it really your work ethic and your ability to stick to it? Or was it just really, maybe more importantly, that genetically you're so superior that you were able to do things not right and still kick everybody's ass who did everything right but didn't have that, you know, that genetic component, I guess. I mean, it's tough. It's a tough but the balance is important. The balance is a good one because it's, you know, I always laugh and say if you're good – a good competitor and you've got a great physique and everything and you're 23 years old and you're going to college, that's not difficult. I'm sorry, but it's just not difficult to do. I understand that your life is stressful relative to your life because to that point, you're probably in your most stressful time of your life. But get to 35 where you have kids and a career and a mortgage and a marriage and try to balance everything and still be as focused on your dream and, you know, competing and being the best bodybuilder you can, then I'll be impressed. Because that's really, really difficult to do.
Yeah. I mean, you know what's a prime example of that? Is Brandon Curry. He's been a pro, probably for a while. Never had, you know, his results have been, you know, middle of the pack or, you know, not, he's definitely not winning the Olympias or anything. Then he went over to Kuwait to the oxygen gym, which everybody thinks they have this like magic drug there, but basically it's like going to boot camp. They put you in a structure. You don't waver from the structure. And then he goes and wins the New Zealand, the IBB show in New Zealand and looks phenomenal.
Yeah. I was thinking, you know, of the same person.
And he's not a young guy either for a pro. You know, I mean, he's got to be, what, mid-30s?
He's been around a little while now.
Yeah. And he goes over there and looks just lights out compared to what he looked like before.
Okay, so, but what does that say? Like, what do you think?
I'm agreeing with what you're saying. He had
structure. That's what I think, too. I almost look at it and go, I'll tell everybody who's listening, it's just my opinion. All three of the people who are listening, and my mom being one of them, love you, Mom. Here's why oxygen gym work. Because everybody thinks, I love that you brought this up. Everyone thinks like the air is different over there. Or they, you know, behind the counter, instead of stocking protein powder like they do at Armbrust Gym, there's like, I don't know, vials and vials of special DECA or some shit. I don't know. But to me, I know.
Dreams could come true. Yeah.
But to me, I kind of have to laugh because the only thing that I think is going on here is that people with freaky genetics who didn't do everything right and have ridden on those genetics for quite a while, and they, you know, they're at the higher end of the sport, so they've got more attention, more exposure. And you tend to think I'll just use Brandon Curry as an example. And I don't know the guy. I don't know his background. So I may be dead wrong. So if Brandon, if you're one of the other three who's listening, and I'm wrong, I apologize, but I'm going to speculate here and say, as hard as he has always trained and everything else, he probably has been riding on that genetic, variable for a while, not doing everything right, not as structured as he could be, and he was just so fucking good that he was a pro, and he was can we say he's a mid-level pro without that sounding?
No, I'd say that's
bad.
Accurate.
Okay, because I certainly don't mean it bad. I think he's got a great physique.
Sure.
And I think a mid-level pro is a, you know, still a bad motherfucker when it comes to bodybuilding. I don't want to sound disrespectful when I say that.
Sure.
But what happens is all of a sudden, then he goes and he does. He gets the structure. He starts doing everything right. I don't think it's necessarily a distraction thing. I mean, it could be. Maybe he's got a drama-filled life with poor relationships and financial despair because he doesn't know how to spend money and doesn't do it responsibly. I don't know. I'm not sure. But I would tend to think that it's just a lack of structure. Now he's doing everything right, and all of a sudden, on top of his awesome genetic predisposition, now he's just making all these huge – I think Ronnie Coleman – was a similar situation back when he, you know, everybody thinks, well, Chad Nichols had a, you know, this special. I think Chad Nichols is a bad motherfucker when it comes to prep. Don't get me wrong. I've got a lot of respect for the guy, but I don't think it was some kind of special formula. I think that there were just things structure wise and in his life that were not as well structured, and he wasn't doing everything he could to get as big and as good as he possibly could be until that point in his life. When he started making those retarded gains,
he even admitted that he turned the corner at a one of the Grand Prix shows when he walked in Flex Wheeler's room and asked him, "Why do I keep coming in 12th or whatever?" And then he said that he learned about vitamin A, X, Y. He even admitted to it. He used those references, but yeah, but his training wasn't where it should have been either.
Right, because then, okay, you find a, you know, because everybody now could be thinking, oh, nice job, Skip, you fucked up. At least in Ronnie Coleman's position, it was that he wasn't taking this or that or taking enough. Okay, but what happens when you do that? What happens when you take more shit and you step it up? You know full well that the large majority of people take a closer look at their nutrition. It's like being on cycle versus not. We all pay, whether we think we do or not, more attention, and we're more structured, more disciplined, and we're killing it when we're on versus when we're off. If anybody says otherwise, they're almost certainly probably lying, or they don't even know. They just want to think that they're killing it when they're off equally as hard as when they're on. But the reality is, if we're all being honest, we are all more structured, and we're less likely to miss workouts, we're less likely to miss meals, and we're more likely to kill it when we're on.
Yeah,
and that comes back to the structure and the commitment and the focus and the drive. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I think in Ronnie Coleman's case, he was natural up until that point.
I'm really regretting using Ronnie Coleman's example.
I know what you mean, though.
He was very limited, but you are right that he didn't have a coach. I don't believe that point. And he was just kind of doing what he thought he had done before, and it wasn't working overall.
This will back up my point even more. Send someone with shitty genetics over to Oxygen Gym. Send me over there, and I'll come back in a year looking exactly the same fucking way I do now. And then at least people go, oh, it doesn't work for everybody. Skip was right.
Skip broke Oxygen Gym.
Yeah, exactly. He broke the myth.
There's bodybuilders. There's bodybuilders that have gone over there and come out not looking a lot different because they had the work ethic and the programs together prior.
Exactly. And that's why it's unfortunate. You know, we always focus. It doesn't make for a good story if we don't focus on, you know, the, like, continuing the myth and the, you know, the – the what's the word like the magic and the yeah like what is something's going on. It's like something in the sand over there.
Yeah, the anabolic chicken.
Yeah, there you go.
But you know, back to the wreck thing, if I were hypothetically to make a sign that says GHB for sale and hold it up and walk into a state level bodybuilding show, I'd probably get mauled 10 feet inside the door. So anybody who thinks that recreational use is not very prevalent is got their head up there in the clouds. Because it's all over the place.
But do you agree with me with my risk? I mean, I really just believe that the people that we surround ourselves with who do compete, and I'm not talking about, you know, the 22-year-olds who've been training for a year and a half who do men's physique, or the bikini girls. I'm talking about bodybuilding, like hardcore, balls out. The people who are typically involved in that sort of, their behaviors to me, just in general, are riskier. Wouldn't you agree or no? I do. I really think that that is a big part. It's like a draw. Yeah, you want to look freaky and you want to look different than anything else, but you almost kind of want to take all those risks. Like you've not just accidentally stumbled upon an endeavor that is potentially dangerous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You could pretend you accidentally, but like, oh, I didn't know I had to take all these drugs. Yeah, but you're willing to. I mean, you're willing to do it. Let's be fair here.
Listen.
So, you know, you use nicotine, and we never really got directly. We, you know, I'm really good at tangents and everything else. But
well, it all related. To me,
yeah, absolutely. I just think that the nicotine, if I'm being completely honest, and here's the thing, I'm trying to be careful with this because I have a lot of respect for one of the prep guys in general who has made a lot of reference to using nicotine, and I really do think he's a good prep guy, and I think that he is largely incredibly responsible. But I just think that, and I don't know that he necessarily recommends nicotine to his clients. I don't think that's the case at all. All I'm saying is if someone ever were to do that, I do think that that is irresponsible. Nicotine is one of the most addictive substances, I think, out there. And I, you know, I chewed Kodiak for years and quit 12, 13, 14 years ago, and I don't even know how long it's been. And every day, I still want to rub. Bad. So if I smell it, I'm like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. So I would never recommend someone use it. If you're already using it, you know, like Scott is saying, he just used tobacco for a long, that's completely different. Continue to use it. Will it have an impact or a positive impact? I think it probably would, but I don't think it's anything so huge and over the top that it's worth going to such an addictive, you know, compound, that it's going to be that beneficial. But I get your question. It isn't directly about nicotine. Right. It's more along the lines of where that line is. And you could say, well, some are legal, some aren't. Nobody gives a shit in bodybuilding whether anything is legal or not.
That's true. That's true.
Well, you have the part of, you know, gum in general has alcohol sugar in it.
Right.
And I've seen people that chew 6-7 packs of gum a day when they're prepping. You start adding all those empty carbs up, or carbs that convert, or actual sugar carbs. I mean, you chew 6 packs of gum, that's a lot of carbs.
Well, yeah, and there's still an insulin response. I love when people think that it's completely innocuous.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's no big deal because it's along the lines of when you have a Walden Farms serving size of, you know, 1/100th of a teaspoon and it doesn't have any carbs in it. You drink half the fucking bottle. Don't kid yourself. I mean, I don't let my clients use Walden Farms syrups and chocolates and stuff. I don't. I look at it this way, and I understand that this is going to make me sound really fucking old, but if you can't get around the taste and your food has to taste good, you might as well just take up golf.
Hey.
And that's not a shot at anybody doing golf or playing golf, but I'm of the belief that I just don't, you're prepping. Like, what good is the food? Let's be fair. The food isn't going to taste good no matter what you put on it. So if you put shitty fucking, or if you put, you know, any of this sugar-free, what's it going to, it's going to taste like shit with sugar-free syrup on it. What the hell's the difference? I don't get into that. Or when the girls do their protein souffle things where they fold and they put it in the dishwasher and you just eat your fucking food. Take 5 minutes, eat your fucking food and move on with life. That I don't understand. I can't relate to that. And I understand it's because I'm old. You know, the first thing that we got in the 80s, Scott will know this. What is the first thing that the bodybuilding industry was able to see for taste that could add any type of flavor to a dieting sort of meal? Butter buds. That was like the first fucking thing that came out.
Liver
right?
cabs.
Yeah, there you go. Yum. Yeah, so then it was like, oh my God, this is so. I have to laugh now. I'm like, if some of these people could go back, if you guys could go back to the, you would, a lot of you would feel the same way I do in the sense that it's there were just years and years and years where you just ate your fucking food and you sucked it up, you manned up, and you ate your goddamn food, you choked it down, and you move on. That's really a lot of how I fucking hate chicken. I just choke it down. I cook it like shit because I'm in a hurry and I'd rather save time and have it too fucking dry and it's less food to eat. And then you just choke it down and move on. I don't have that kind of time to spend on meal prep that's going to make that shit taste good. Ain't happening.
No, it's a lot of work too. And then once you're committed to all that, that's like a lot of extra time every day. I'd rather save that time personally, but I guess that's kind of like old school of me too then.
Exactly. And teach their own. I mean, I want your food. Okay. But God, what happens when your food tastes so fucking good and then all of a sudden you're stuck and you got to choke down, you know, a meal. You're going to be complaining with the best of them.
Yeah, no kidding.
I know a friend of mine, he won the AAU All-American heavyweight back when that was, I don't know, is that even slide? You know, back, this was probably in the early 90s. And he worked with a guy, and the guy had him on branch chain amino acid tabs. That was his meals.
Nice.
He literally had no food in his meal.
Dynamic life essence.
And he won. And he stuck to it. I'm like, how in the hell did you even make it 2 days on that? He goes, I don't know. I just did it. I think he had like a couple scoops of whey or something in there, but that was it.
Well, that's back when people actually did what their coaches told them to do. Well, there was like only three coaches in the entire world. So you couldn't bounce around to different coaches all the time because you just run out of coaches. You'd end up working with the same guys because you'd be like, oh, I want to work with somebody else, but there's only three. So I guess I got to go back and work with Chris Aceto now because there's nobody else. That's not a shot at Chris Aceto. That's my making a point that back then there just weren't a lot of prep coaches. This is like pre-social media.
Right. Well, I feel like that generated some interesting stuff. We should probably move on, get to some questions here. I think that was a success. I really liked that. So, you know, thank you guys for your input. And thank you, Skip, for your segues, because it went somewhere I totally didn't expect.
Hey, well, without my segues, questions won't last an hour. And we can't have that.
If you've enjoyed S2H's contribution to Blood, Sweat, and Gear and would like to learn more, reach out to his team at advancedtrainingtech.com. No matter what your goals are, if you're heading to the pro stage or just want a recomp, feel free to register at advancedtrainingtech.com. Team S2H will be available to educate and inform members as to what plans would best fit their needs, or just hang out and interact at the forums free of charge. That's advancedtrainingtech.com. Team Skip has been synonymous with bodybuilding conditioning for the last two decades. From NFL players to professional bodybuilders to 40-something guys that just want to kill it in the gym and their shirt sleeves. If you have too much skin, call Skip. TeamSkip.com, because skin is overrated. So the first one I have here is actually directed to you, Skip. And they ask that since you've been on TRT, have you noticed an improvement in your hemoglobin and hematocrit levels? He said, I've had issues even at 100 milligrams a test a week. And I think that even with small amounts of gear, he goes over the high range. Then you have others that can take a gram and still have no issues. So what's where are you at and what are your thoughts on this one?
I tell you where I've been lucky. I have been fortunate in the sense that I am not one of those guys who has to struggle with potential, like my hemoglobin, hematocrit, RBCs raising or continuing to rise over time, even subtly, staying at the same dose of TRT. And I almost really seriously think, thank God, and that's coming from an atheist, but I still want to thank God because it's just the thought of it would, I mean, I can't imagine. It was difficult enough to make the decision to, you know, pull away from cycling and stuff and to go to TRT, let alone to make it. And I know there are people out there that have to make this decision, and it just sucks. But I would never want to have to make the decision, and maybe it'll come to this, I don't know, that I can't even do TRT because of Ryzen. I'll tell you what, if I can say this. It is very, very possible that if I was at a TRT dose, and like right now my TRT keeps me at, I'm between high 11s and about 1250. That's, I consider, you know, 1200 being the top of the range, and that's where I want to be. If I had to come down to, say, you know, 600 or 700, cool. I could still probably deal with that without too. I'd be disappointed, but I'd be like, okay, I can still. If I had to deal with the question of you either, like, if I was doing a small enough TRT dose and my blood levels were 500 or 600, and I was having slowly rising blood levels, let's just say for the sake of reference, maybe every 6 months it would go up, you know, half a point.
Yeah.
That would be, I would probably deal with that and hope that it would plateau and stay. You know, maybe it would be a little high, but it would at least plateau, because not running TRT to me would absolutely fucking blow. We're talking, you know, obviously you're talking risk with, you know, increased blood viscosity, but you're also talking quality of life and, you know, training that you've done for a long time. I mean, you know, I don't want to sound greedy, but to not have anything would be very, very difficult. So I am fortunate. My blood levels are just, they're just constant. They're stable and they haven't come up. Now, I have not done blood work in, March, end of March. I did blood work in December, and it had not, the last three times it hit, because I mean, you know, I've been TRT for a while now. So there's been no fluctuation. There's been no increase, anything like that. So nothing that stands out, which is awesome. But I'll do it again after the show just to see. I haven't done anything, or after the shows. So probably late summer. I got a couple vacations for, we got our annual bike trip and shit like that. So, you know, I will. And I'll stay on TRT. I won't come off TRT unless I have some kind of weird, like my numbers are up. And I was concerned that they might go up because of my issues in the past with melanotan.
Yeah.
So I am fortunate in the sense that, you know, that has not happened. And I hope to God it never does happen, because that is a difficult. I've had clients, regular guys who, you know, they stay at that low dose, and it might even be 100, 140, you know, milligrams, and they steadily, you know, have increasing blood numbers, and that really would, that would be difficult. So did the guy who asked the question have that, where he was at TRT? I mean, I missed the setup. Did he have, his numbers are increasing on a low TRT dose?
He says, he just says, I think that for some of us, even the smallest amounts of gear will bring you over the high range. So he doesn't say specifically, but it sounds like maybe it is something he's been dealing with personally.
Yeah. And what happens is, just to touch on this real quick and then, you know, you can move on, but a lot of what happens is people start to freak out because they're on a low dose of TRT and their blood numbers are going up, and they assume that they're just going to continue to go up forever. And that's not the case. Eventually they will stabilize. They're not always going to climb. The concern becomes, where does it plateau? And then, you know, one of my guys lived here at, it's elevation again too, that I can't believe that so many doctors and endocrinologists miss, but this guy lived at like 7,500 feet, and you know, they were all over him and worried about his numbers because he, you know, he was just barely out of range on like 150 milligrams of TRT a week. Mm. And I finally told him, like, you just need to go to another doctor who has some sense of the relationship between TRT and elevation. He did. And the guy's like, well, I'm not the least bit concerned. You're within range. Nice. I can't even believe someone else would say this to you. And understand that I live in an area where elevation is an issue. I can't even believe, you know, if I lived at sea level, or there in Michigan, you have doctors who don't know much about TRT relative to elevation, I would understand that because that's something that's dealt with all the time. But here in Colorado, I mean, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all. Exactly.
Yeah. Next question. I'll go to you on this one first. Scott, he says, how would you change your macros on off days in the off season? He says, I do well off of carbs, but have trouble if my fats get too high. He says, I see a lot of coaches suggesting to replace large amounts of carbs with fats on off days. So far, it looks like that hasn't been working well for him. He feels like he's less metabolically flexible.
You know, that's an easy and impossible answer to question to answer, because everybody's different.
Yeah.
I mean, I have people that we all have that do well on high fats, high protein, low carbs, and they can grow. It depends on, how their body's metabolizing the foods. Everything's going to convert to carbs at some point. Some of it is. It depends on the person. I mean, I've got people that intake very low carbs, especially for high body weights, and they grow. But some people need a lot of carbs, and depends on how much glycogen your liver stores, how effectively your body converts proteins and fats to glucose. It's really kind of dependent. But if it's not working, he said he had a coach, and he needs to communicate that, and maybe they need to look at another plan. I don't know. I don't know the guy's whole story, you know. But if a diet's not working, then obviously you got to change it. Try another direction. I don't like the big jumps, though. If you're really high in carbs, it's not working, then all of a sudden you just suck them all out and throw it all into fat, protein. You know, there's got to be a middle ground somewhere. Well, I don't really find the 33-33-33 thing to work very well for a lot of people.
How about specifically for non-training days, I think is where he's going with this. So he likes the carbs higher. He says he does well with them, but then, you know, he's trying to figure out, well, what should he do if he's not training? He's not, you know, he's not using all those calories in the gym.
Well, if he likes the carbs, liking and then working.
But that's what I'm saying. I used the word like, but he says, you know, question for all three of you. How do you change your macros on off days in the off season?
If someone's growing in the off season and they're on higher carbs,
yeah,
and they maintain a turtle shell, you know, they stay within reasonable condition of their contest weight, which for me, it depends on what weight class they're in, but let's just say it's a light heavyweight. If that light heavyweight stays in the 220 range or so, that to me is probably about optimal, or a little bit less, you know, around there, 218, 222, somewhere in there. Now, if they start getting sloppy, obviously, I would probably lower the carbohydrates on off days.
Okay.
Carbs are addictive, in a sense. Some people just can't function without them. They just have to have them because they want to feel full. They want that carbohydrate, you know, intake to be high, to keep full, and keep them energetic. And so they look great. They think they look great all the time. And that, you know, eventually sometimes it'll backfire on them too.
Yeah.
I tend to straight diet people more in the off season. There are some exceptions, but I don't really change the days either way. Kind of depends on their training too and what kind of training they're doing. You know, are they on an off day that's going into a AM, you know, big time, you know, off one meal leg day, then obviously the off day last meal is going to contain a lot more than it would if they were training biceps at 5 PM the next day.
Yeah.
So it's going to vary on the training type, style, amount, days. But in general, yeah, I would probably lower the carbs a little bit on the off days. But it's still person dependent. Some people can eat buckets of ice cream and never get fat. Yeah.
Assholes.
How about you, Skip?
actually, a lot of what he just said, I completely, I'm not trying to go the easy route here, but yeah. I completely agree with. I'm more of the, what is the activity for the day? And that's how I, you know, base a lot of car. But understand that's coming from the older guy who doesn't move as much. So again, you know, metabolism, like Scott is saying, is, you know, is huge. And are you going to be able to stay lean? Are you growing? Are you dieting? You know, are you, where are you metabolically? What kind of activity? What is your daily activity as far as even a job? You know, I've said before, time and time again, if you're an ER nurse, running around constantly, working the later shift, you know, the noon to midnight or something like that, or 3 p.m. to 3 a.m., you're probably going to be running around and have a higher demand, you know, for energy and for carbs that you can get away with. So there's just a lot. There's a lot of variables there. But I think my rule, if there is a rule, is the carb intake. I'm not huge on carbs. The carb intake is enough to keep you full if you're not dieting, you know, to lose body fat, and enough to supply enough fuel for intense training. And on days that you don't train, I just don't think that the demand for carbohydrates is terribly high.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Now, what about replacing those carbs with, say, calories from fats or even protein for that matter? You know, keeping the calories higher with one of those other macros.
Yeah, I don't think the calories, you know, need to be significantly less on training days. I think I tend to have lower. I mean, again, you know, your caloric output is going to be lower if you're not training. It depends on cardio. It depends on daily activity. But you know, calories still will tend to be lower on the days that you're not as active. And I'm okay with that. So can you, I mean, the argument might be, and correct me if I'm wrong, but let's just say you kept the calories the same on a workout day versus a non-workout day, but you changed, you know, the majority of carbs over to fats.
Okay.
On a non-training day. I still think that the large majority of people, some will get away with that, but the large majority of people still won't need that higher caloric intake on a non-training day. That makes sense, or did I?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, all right, cool.
And one trick you can do is on your off days, if you feel like you're hungry or not going to have carbs, is consume more water while you're eating. Because it makes you feel fuller. Water lines your stomach.
Sure.
It does. It works. I mean, you can actually, you might even feel a little bloated.
Yeah.
But if you're consuming a higher amount of liquids during your meals, you're going to feel fuller. So you may not look fuller as much as you are carved up on a training day, depending on how different the carbs are, but you won't be hungry.
That's my downfall. That's where I mess up when we go out to eat and we'll have like a cheat meal or something. And I'll order like a Diet Coke and I just slug that thing down before the food even gets there. And then the food gets there and I'm drinking another one. And before you know it, I haven't even finished my food and I'm totally full because I, you know, I consumed all that liquid.
And then you got to take a dump.
Yep. Yeah. Plus, I think there's something to be said. What do you guys think, too? I think what you're telling me by this reducing the carbs, you know, you're not hammering those carbs 24/7. You know, you're using them when you need them, but you're also, you know, it's probably helping your insulin sensitivity a little bit by keeping right. those carbs around exactly. when you need them. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I do feel that way. Yeah.
I'm not big on like really high carbs anyway. I mean, I don't know what Skip's philosophy in relation to weight, but
yeah, no, I'm not either.
The old days of, you
unless
know,
you have a ridiculous metabolism,
pizza that's and eat shit and get all swole up like the Michelin man. Don't like that at all.
Right.
All right. This is a question I came up with last week because we were talking a little bit about glutathione. I wanted to know if either you guys had any experience with it or if you had any clients that had used it. I know it's kind of popular now as an injectable that some guys are using, and I've heard some mixed stuff about it.
Go ahead, Scott. I'm using it right now.
I was going to say, why don't you get your experience out there?
Well, I mean, it's not the reason I was pushing it to you is my experience is 5 days.
Ah.
Yeah, it's really what it is I've got it in there as a massively strong, because the shit is not cheap.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I mean, I think, you know, I didn't order it because I wanted it right away, so I went to the local GNC. But, I mean, I'm talking like, you know, a bottle of glutathione for like $35. I mean, we're talking substantial. It's fucking expensive.
Wow.
500 milligram capsule. So, you know, I'm using it as a strong antioxidant. Basically, there's a connection between using it to... for us older fuckers in combination with DNP to minimize the potential negative impact of potential to get cataracts.
Oh, no kidding.
Impact your, yeah. And there's some pretty strong, well, there's strong correlation between age and the potential for cataracts. And then there's strong relationship between supplementing glutathione with helping to keep that cataract issue while using DNP at bay.
I'm pretty new to all this. I don't know a lot about it. Can you tell me any more about, I mean, obviously I should probably do a Google search, but
no, you should just ask Scott, cause I would imagine Scott has more. That's basically the, I mean, I don't know much more about it. I mean, again, I'm pretty honest and been pretty open about the fact that I'm kind of learning as I go, and I don't know much more about it other than that connection is pretty strong, and that supplementing, especially older, you know, us older fuckers and women, not only age, but the risk of cataracts while using DMP goes up substantially. For older women, even more so than older men. So, you know, in the limited research I've done, and Scott, I'm sure, will correct me, you know, if he has or hasn't seen the same thing, but it's not only the risk of cataracts, but it's not necessarily dose dependent or frequency of use. I mean, sometimes there's cases where it's been used once, a relatively low dose, and they come out with issues. So, yeah, that's a pretty big, you know, concern.
Yeah, especially if you inhale it or you take it in IV methods, there could be, you know, more risk than the oral, which is most likely what people are using for the most part. You know, I mean, it's just produced naturally by the liver, but you also get it through fruits, vegetables, some meat sources.
Okay.
You know, it's cataract is one thing you hear a lot about, but man, it's used for a ton of stuff. Heart disease, cancer, alcoholism, hepatitis, AIDS, chronic fatigue. I need it because I got memory loss, so I need it for that. You know, they got stuff in Alzheimer's and Parkinson's research with it.
Damn.
It's got stuff like what is it? Lung diseases, you know, like pulmonary fibrosis and stuff. I mean, it's got a whole host of, and that depends on how it's taken, you know, either orally, inhalants, or IV. It kind of serves a different purpose. Well, cancer too. Chemotherapy patients will be prescribed it. To some degree also, or they'll have it in some type of prescription drug that using for to counter the effects of chemotherapy, the negative effects of chemotherapy on them. I mean, it's even got like fertility studies. I mean, there's all kinds of shit it's out there for. It's like the giant umbrella drug, you know, but cataract's the one you hear the most sometimes. And, I think you can just get it through food. Now, if you're one of these people that doesn't eat vegetables, doesn't eat fruit, you're like, you eat chicken and rice all the time.
Yeah.
You know, you might be a person that needs it more than somebody who has a well-balanced, fiber-filled meal. a meal plan. So, yeah, I mean, it's got its place.
Yeah. I've seen it at some of the hormone replacement places that are doing an injectable glutathione. Can you do this intramuscular? Because I just did a quick Google search and I'm seeing like glutathione injection IV, glutathione injection IV. I'm not going to do something IV. You know, I'm just, you know, we're talking about where we draw lines. I draw the line at IV drugs or, you know, IV vitamins.
That's you can IM it.
Yeah.
That's what the, if most people have for chemotherapy to get it done, I have some of my family that's going through that right now and they're going to get their shot. Well, that's what they're getting. Well, part of it. Mm. It's a blend of a few things, but that's in there.
But you think like that's what Skip's using is fine too, just the oral, huh?
Yeah, I mean for what he needs it for.
Okay.
I mean the oral part covers a wider umbrella to where the IMIV inhalant route kind of targets different things.
Hmm.
Well, I take mine rectally.
Parachute.
Full disclosure. Yeah. Hmm.
Teabag it.
But, I wrap it in bacon. Yeah, normally you would do that if you gave a medication to your dog, but I like bacon.
I was going to say to your cat.
It just goes, yeah, exactly.
It's also used in strongman and powerlifting because it's good for tissue repair.
Ah, no kidding.
Stuff. So it's a hell of a lot better than Toradol.
Hey, just to put you on the spot, then, do you know what kind of dosing I should be looking for on this for the oral? Because I'm gonna check this out.
The oral one?
Yeah.
Oral's for use this oral. you know what? I don't use it personally.
Okay.
So I probably use it for my brain, but I don't know. What are you taking, Skip? It's a little. It's like just minimal. It's probably like 25 milligrams.
I take 500 milligram actually.
Okay.
Twice a day. Yeah, and I probably don't need that, but I'm a bodybuilder, so I like to take more than what is needed. And I just want to let all the listeners know, I am going to throw Scott under the bus. While I was talking earlier about my DNP, I get a text from Dickhead that says, just this, verbatim, I told you so, you fucker. The "ya fucker" was not from Scott. That was my response to Scott. And if I'm being completely honest, the only reason I didn't want to go into it is because I don't want to listen to him. I don't want to. So now I know the next show that you guys are going to want to know how the DMP went, and Scott's going to be preparing to absolutely fucking destroy me. One of the first things he's going to say is, "Why didn't you listen to me to begin with?" Because that's not how you learn. I'm a learner. I'm also kind of stubborn, and I want to try different shit. But it'll make
Some people learn at the community college. Some people learn at Harvard.
Yeah, see, now don't be a fucking. Save that for the next show.
You know, back on that topic, by the way, how much do you think, Scott, the difference is between crystal and the powder DMP? I know a guy; he got some from, I think it was Enhanced Athlete. I don't know whether there's this crystal or powder or not or what, but he tried his own variation of the fruit diet and he got like next to no results. Granted, he was going on very limited information that was disclosed here on the show. But I just have never heard of like DMP just not working, you know, and like he was already in a fat burning state.
Should I be politically correct or just give it like the real answer?
Let's hear it.
I mean, I said in the last show, was like maybe it was one of four, that I didn't, you know, I'm going to give everybody the answer. So there was some stuff left out of that accelerate the effect. But
sure.
The powdered form is not nearly as good as the crystalline.
Okay.
If it's properly, has the proper additives and everything.
Right.
And I'm going to say this because I've heard this from multiple people, that particular brand is not very good.
Mm.
And I've heard that from multiple people, that they haven't gotten that one, what's it called? You just mentioned it, the name it came from.
Enhanced Athlete?
Yeah, I've heard it's not very good.
You know what I heard? I heard they're never going to be a sponsor on our show. That's what I heard.
Right, right. I you know what? I do like Tony Huge. You know, I've gotten to know him a little bit, and I respect him. I think he would, you know, try to put a good product on the market. So I'm going to put it out there and say, I can't tell you guys either way. I can tell you this. I have access to a ton of their DMP. I don't have it, but I have access to it. And it's a plant fertilizer. There's some plants in my yard. It's almost spring. So I've considered using their fertilizer.
Wouldn't you use it in the winter? Because that makes your plants hot.
Keeps them growing.
I'll tell you what, it's going to be interesting this next. We have to make sure that we talk about this, because even though it's only been 5 days, I already have some things that have come up that are going to be really interesting, not only interesting to talk about, but it's going to be interesting because I want to ask Scott something to be able to understand why the few things that have happened that are so radically different from what is supposed to happen. It'll be interesting, and I'm not going to let him say it's only because you used it again so soon, because that's not going to work. But it's going to be interesting, and I know who you're talking about, and the fact that it didn't work very well. Now, I still have plenty of time to – this week will actually be quite telling as far as how, you know, well it works and what happens and anything else. But it is completely – I'm reacting completely differently to it this time than I did last time. Not only myself, but a couple other people as well, with some similar – changes that things are just really, really different, and it's going to be interesting. And with God, I almost said his name, that would have sucked, but with him not responding to it very well, and I don't know what what type of quality or whatever, I don't know. Yeah. I would think, much along the lines you are, that you would think it would be a pretty good quality, you know, product. I would think, but you know, the other part is too, is there's a lot of factors or a lot of details with that person, with what they did, that you just don't know if they know what, you know, I know, or what I've gotten from Scott, or if I am doing things, you know, if the guy you're talking about is doing things similar, it'll be interesting. So I would say this, maybe the guy that we're talking about should give up more details about his plan, and we can pick it apart on the next show and say, well, you know, you didn't do this, or what about this, that sort of thing. Cause there may be things that he's not doing that we would do.
I have a bunch of details. I'll send it over to you guys, and then I'm sure he'd be happy to share with us more information to kind of put together a case study, if you guys want to do that.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Sure. Is it the two mini cupcake guy?
I don't know who that is.
I busted his balls. He's like, I just had too many cupcakes. I'm like, how the fuck you eat too many cupcakes? like why would you even do that?
Before you pay for them.
Yeah, god damn.
It's your way to check out. You eat those too many cupcakes. That's just to get to the door.
Mike, that's exactly why it didn't work, because your dumbass ate too many cupcakes. You could not refrain. You didn't have the discipline to not eat too many cupcakes, so you fucked it all up.
I think we should do a show where we're all on DMP. I think that'd be good. All right. I've got one more serious question here. Wondering your guys' thoughts on Mike Arnold's ultimate insulin protocol utilizing Humulin R pre-workout. The general protocol is 15 units of Humulin R with a shake containing 150 grams of carbs, around 60 hydrosylate, some creatine, leucine sipped intra and post, followed by whole food post meal or post workout meal. Asking because now all I hear is that fast acting insulin is king, and there is no place for longer acting insulin in bodybuilding. Since Humulin R is available over the counter, I was leaning towards this option, but obviously starting way lower, like 5 to 6 units, and very, very slowly working my way up. This is my long-winded question. I appreciate your opinions. Thanks in advance, guys.
Go ahead, Scooter.
I played the fifth.
Texas Scott pleads the fifth.
He pleads the fifth.
Does not want to incriminate himself. You know what? I would say that, well, first, is Humulinar dosed sub-Q, or are we just assuming that?
I'm going to say let's assume dosed, it.
Okay. Because if it's dosed, you know, obviously I am. It's going to have the same or roughly the same onset time as Humalog. So, you know, I don't think that dosing it sub-Q and having a longer onset time and dragging it out a little bit more is necessarily a bad thing. I think that people tend to use quick in and out just because it's easier to manage. It's more predictable. And then you, especially when you get into more or more frequent dosing, as an example, with skip loading and how I do it with my clients using the SCGS compound, aka insulin, that's super compensating glucose storage compound.
All has been revealed now.
Yes. There would be overlap. I mean, you can already overlap if you're dosing, you know, fast acting, you know, 3 hours or less. By the time the end of the day rolls around, you can have some overlap. You got to be very, very careful. But if it's just dosed once, I don't think that that's necessary. I mean, the protocol that you just mentioned to me doesn't sound bad at all. I would just say that I'm not, and everybody has their thing, I'm just not very big on frequent insulin use anymore, pre and post. And it's kind of funny. Here's how the trend goes. It started off post, then it went to pre, and now it's starting to go towards only loading, like with myself. I only have clients, and they do incredibly well on dosing it only with skip loading. Pre-workout gets tough because, well, it doesn't get tough, but the main issue being, okay, is the frequency, is it too frequent? Because I've said before, and I really believe that it's very, very difficult to tell whether you're building a resistance to the insulin. And I think that you can't necessarily see it until you be like, oh, it's like you're not going to see body fat accumulating until you're just fucking fat. And I think the large majority of people in situations where they use it's frequent use of insulin, pre or post, or pre and post, large majority of people, unless you're genetically predisposed to be awesome, you're going to get fat.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very easy way to get fat. And it's so cute to watch because everybody who is using it is completely convinced that they're just growing at this rate that they just can barely fathom. Mm. Yet everybody else watching the event is going, you're just fucking fat, dude. Like, what mirror are you looking in? So how you feel on it and, you know, the increases in strength and pump and things like that, they can be pretty misleading.
Hmm.
And I think that the frequency of the insulin use is the less it can be used and the more sensitive you can stay, the better it's going to work, even for people who tend to get fat on it. And when you use it less frequently, and especially when it's around loading,
yeah,
you're less likely to get fat on it as well. That's just my game.
I got one point. Humulin R is not a long-acting insulin.
Yeah.
Well, but we're talking relatively.
It's duration to Humalog, Novolog, is like 3 to 5 hours in duration. Humulin R is 4 to 6. I mean, they're probably the same. It's just that Humalog peaks very fast.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But Humulin R doesn't.
Right.
So that's really the only difference between them. So you're not really getting anything that's acting a much longer in your body.
Right, but it's still
the peak is fast.
But it's still acting different in the sense that, I mean, the peak alone is important. The difference in the peak times, wouldn't you agree? I mean,
oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's what I say. I mean, I don't want to, because you're absolutely right, and I agree with you. But I think that's where people tend to, you know, the difference between Humalog and Humulin, and so it should probably be stated. It's probably good that you said that, because yes, the total onset time is not, or the by the time it clears isn't much different, but that peak is considerably. I mean, that's, you know, I can cause problems versus not causing problems. So
oh, yeah,
that's definitely. Why I say, yeah, I think that's why I was just making the point that Humalog, it's easier to manage because it just peaks and drops, and it's, that's why it's kind of meal to meal versus, you know, Humulin R sub Q. I mean, you could probably get a couple meals out of, you know, one dose. I mean, I think that's why he's saying, you know, the intra and post. I mean, shit, that's probably going to get you all the way to the post meal.
Sure.
I mean, my point was that Humalog is what they call a rapid insulin. Humulin R is a fast acting. And then you go to your intermediate, like Novalin and Humulin N. Then your long acting is Lantus. And there's like some blends of Humulin and Humalog, Humulin and Humalog and stuff that are like 70-30s. They're really long acting. You're talking over 24 hours. Hmm. So, but a real long acting insulin would be Lantus.
Yeah.
Where a, you know, a Humulin N would be in the middle. So you're calling Humulin R fast acting, maybe fast acting in its immediate action peak, but in its duration, it's not very much different than Humalog.
And I get the question a lot, why not use 70-30 or Lantus or, you know, shit like that. Maybe not Lantus, but 70-30 has been asked, you know, quite a bit with long skip loads. And the answer is simple. You still, in my opinion, it's still better to dose it with a quick clearance or a quick peak because you don't know what is going to happen 6 hours later. You know, you get into a car accident, or you end up running out of gas in the middle of nowhere and you don't have food, and you're going to wish your dumb ass was dosing that insulin meal to meal.
Yeah.
Versus getting, I mean, it's just a situation where you're just avoiding potential, you know, will things like that ever happen? It's certainly possible that it won't, but you just don't know.
I've thought about trying Lantus after I talked to Colette Nelson. She's a big advocate of either using, you know, real fast acting insulin and microdosing it with each meal. That's what, you know, what she would prefer, or using a Lantus. And my thought was like, you know, same thing was like, hey, you know, I'm afraid I'm going to go to sleep, you know, and go hypo and at night. And her thought was that, you know, so let's say you use 10 units and, you know, it's what, 24 hour or something. I'll just shorten it to 20 hours. So that's, you know, a unit or what, half a unit an hour that, you know, that it's going to be released. She said, you know, you're not going to need much to cover it, but I, you know, that's what it is on paper. I feel like no matter what, anytime I've ever used insulin, it never works out quite on paper the way it does in the real world. You know what I mean? No matter what, I still, I mean, you could do everything right. You still end up going hypo from time to time.
Well, Lantus, unlike any other insulin, has no peak. It has an onset of, you know, like an hour.
Oh, really?
To two maybe.
Okay.
And then it levels out.
So really?
That's its onset is its peak.
Hmm.
So that's, in theory, that's how it's marketed, and that's what it's supposed to act like. So she has a point where, and I don't really particularly care for Lantus, but it, I mean, you know, some people have used it successfully. I don't recommend it because it does have a 24-hour duration. But it's the reason that insulin was designed and was released for was to keep a steady, even keel. For 24 hours, not to have the highs and the lows where you're chasing your blood sugar around. But yeah, it's the only one that has, well, there's a generic version of it. I don't know what it's called, but it's the only one that doesn't have a peak, you know, a onset peak and duration. It's missing the peak part. It just, when its onset hits, that's where it's going. That's the size it's supposed to go and stays that way for 24 hours.
Interesting. But it doesn't sound like that's what, you know, you want anyway, Skip, for, you know, what you're doing with a skip load.
No, that's why I say it's, you know, and again, it's, you know, you got to be careful. Like you said, everyone is different. And, you know, when I'm working with a lot of different people and that's what you still want, that that predictability. You know, you want everybody, you may have different doses, you may need, you know, have different requirements for carbs. The other thing is during a skip load or a refeed, it's far less likely that you're going to not have that dose covered. You know, and I go into this a lot in the DVD, and I think it's important. I go into the insulin a lot because there are just, I think there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I don't want to get going on, but one of the things that I feel is so big, and I love this when the DVD comes, it'll be so, some people will just think I'm nuts and it'll be kind of controversial and it'll cause a stink. And that is, fat intake while you're using or while you have higher insulin levels is not the issue or this massive, huge concern that it has been thought to be, or it's almost, honestly, it's almost kind of mythical. It's like, has anybody ever fucking challenged this? Like, what the fuck? There's just this common understanding, apparently, or acceptance that if you take in fat while you have high insulin levels, you're just going to get fat.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Have shown that that is just so not true over so many clients and so many. I mean, there's a lot that'll go into it. Even people who are, I mean, I've got clients with ridiculously high body fat levels who come to me for prep. And it's funny because we always have the same conversation. I'll think of one guy is cool as fuck. And I'm obviously not going to mention his name, but I'm like, one of these days you're going to actually come to me for a prep leaner. And we're not going to have to stress and race the clock to the 11th hour to get you ready. And it'll be nice. And you know, we just kind of laugh about it because metabolically, he's not in a good place. He likes food and he's just going to fucking eat and he's going to come to me heavy and we're going to get it done. Yet he can still start almost out of the gates at over 300 pounds with insulin on his skip loads and just melt the fat off.
What does he compete at?
I'd have to check.
Was he like heavyweight though, or?
Yeah, 230.
Okay, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fat.
Pounds. It's a substantial loss. Yeah. Wow. Oh yeah. Yeah. So anyway, that's my there's a lot of things with insulin that I think are just misunderstood. I think a lot of it is misunderstood and just generally accepted, which used to be the case in bodybuilding, nutrition, and drugs and anything else, but I don't think that that's the case anymore. I think that most things are challenged where, you know, 10, 15 years ago, more things were accepted as known and not challenged, but, you know, it's a different topic altogether.
I'm with you on that, though. I mean, I found, at least in my own life, that, you know, at first I was really afraid of using too many fats while I was using insulin, but then I found that I almost couldn't grow without the fats in my diet. Like, I still needed to, when I removed the fats, it's like, even though I was using insulin, it still wasn't enough. Like, I needed fats in my plan still to make optimal progress. And when I added them back in, I didn't see any real change, at least in my own experience, you know, about body fat storage.
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, I've seen it across the board. I mean, like I said, I wouldn't make a statement like that if I hadn't. But again, I'm going to get people who are going to push back. I get that. I understand.
Sure, sure. It's dogma.
That'll be the fun part. You know, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that'll be cool, man. I can't wait for that to come out. It'll be.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I mean, we're in these final stages, and I'm trying to remind people because they're getting tired of hearing. You know, they're like, oh, my God, is it ever going to come out? I understand that. But the reality is the only reason I put it off now is because I do want – there's a lot more information now with prepping and stuff like that that'll be in there. And even cool shit, like I'm going to have, you know, more training footage with and it'll be with my wife, which is cool because that's who I train with. I mean, you know, I train with people who come into town and stuff like that. But by and large, I mean, my wife is my training partner and has been for, you know, longer than a handful of years.
That's not hardcore, bro.
Well, just think it's I know exactly right. And you know what's cool too is, and I don't know if I'll be able to show this, but my damn near almost all of my daughters now train at the same gym. My oldest daughter, who just had our second grandson, she's been going like clockwork, and she had a bunch of second baby fat, if you want to, you know, call it that, that she's working pretty hard and is there pretty consistently. It's kind of neat to go to the gym and you bump into your kids. I mean, you know, even my youngest daughter, who's 12, she likes to go with us. But you know, my 18-year-old will be there and train with my 24-year-old daughter sometime. It's just kind of a cool thing. It's like old people cool shit.
Yeah. We got to wrap it up here. I got to get up to the doctor's office, get my blood work results, and make sure everything's in working order still. What are you guys up to for the day?
AIDS test.
Yep. Yeah. That was it.
Yeah.
We can go over your blood work then on the next show too.
I don't know if we want to do that. It's going to be scary. No, it should be all right.
You think so?
No, everything should be decent. I've been working on my cholesterol, so that's I'm hoping I got my HDL up a little bit. If not this time around, hopefully it'll be a little better by next time. I was down around like 25.
Ooh. Oh,
okay. I know. What was your total?
I'd have to look. I don't remember offhand. I'll check it out. I'll find out later today.
Mine never goes out of the 90s.
No? So, okay.
Yeah. She like 54 HDL.
Nice.
46. Oh, triglycerides like below 60s.
There's other as long as I have one HDL, right. I'm good.
What's your HDL? One?
Yeah, just one. As long as I have one, I feel like I'm okay.
It's a hard worker, that one.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys training
right,
today?
Right up there with my sperm count.
It's all you need, man.
Yeah, one. Just it's one with a fucking S on his chest. I'm good.
Mine's a none.
What's going on for the day? You guys training or what's up?
It's Monday. I got a ton of fucking work to do. I'm backlogged. I'll be racing to the last minute before I go out of the gym or go out of the door to meet my wife at the gym. And do it all again tomorrow.
Nice. How about you, Scott?
Well, first I have to unclog the toilet. Then, you know, it's chest day. Monday, National Chest Day.
You said that last week or last time too, didn't you?
I don't know. I can't remember that far back. I'm not taking my glutathione.
Yeah.
I'm going to go tonight. I got to go pick my Rugrat kid up. Take him to get his license. It should be exciting.
Get off the roads, people.
Mm-hmm. God. I will crash car on the way there.
All right. Let's get out of here for S2H and Skip Hill. I'm Scott McNally, and this has been another episode of Blood, Sweat, and Gear. Send in your questions. Go over to Advices Radio. Click on the forum and give us some material for next show.
Bye.
Advices Radio Network.